What's up and welcome to another episode of the Scott and Ian Show on the SBL podcast. And today, something different, a real treat. I say it all the time, but I say it because it's true. Today, we have the great Amos Heller in the studio it's his studio in Nashville. I get to interview Amos Heller. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Amos, he is the bass player for Taylor Swift. Are you kidding me? Taylor Swift is currently on the biggest tour in history of touring music. Did you know that? Did you know that the Eras Tour is the biggest tour in the history of music, dude? That's wild. And we talk all about it. Now, there might be a couple of questions that I ask that Amos is like, look, I could tell you, but it's the classic thing if I'd have to kill you, right? But we dive into so much. I got a chance to see that show. Amos was nice enough to invite me and my family out to see that show. And it was incredible. And incredible to see him just so passionately playing for an artist that he's been playing with for a very long, long time. Everybody on that stage is engaged. It was the best show I've ever seen. It had to be. It's incredible. So if you get a chance to see it, please see it. Also, I have to tell you, Amos, when this podcast was coming out, Amos has really been working on his YouTube channel too, which I think is so cool because that dude could just play for Taylor Swift. Now, Amos has played for other people too. I saw him with Florida Georgia Line, but that dude has the biggest gig in the world. So he could just chill. Yeah. Could he just hang out on his off days and do nothing? Yes, but he doesn't. He's still like actively playing, working on his YouTube. He does content. So check his YouTube channel out. The link is going to be in the description for a video that he's really excited about. When we were rolling around, I got to hang with him the day before the second show in Minneapolis, and he showed me this band. It's a band called 4 Years Strong from the album Brain Pain. There's a tune called It's Cool. And he was like, Ian, look, you just have to listen to this song. And we listened in my Jeep as we were rolling around. And he's like, this is my white whale. I need to figure out how to play this song. And I was like, amazing. And so it's up. The play along to this song is up. And I love it too. Amos is sort of like a metal dude at heart, which really plays to my inner metal dude because I am too. So kindred spirits, check out his YouTube channel and this new play along video that he just posted. I love that he's still striving. It's really pretty inspirational to me. The link is going to be in the description to check out that video. And let me tell you what's going on at SBL this week. We've got a mentor session coming up Monday, August 14th with Danny Moe talking about the genius of Oteil Burbridge. And Oteil is now playing with the Dead and Company. But I first heard of Oteil with the Aquarium Rescue Unit. Shout out to anybody who remembers or knows the ARU. Incredible band. Oteil, 6-string player, melodic chords. Amazing. Absolute genius. I love that Danny's breaking him down. A genius breaking down a genius. That's very cool. So check that out. That's part of our mentors program. We stream every single Monday, a live stream. You can come, you ask questions, hang out, interface with the teacher. It's wonderful. Also, you guys, we are having a brand new website launch. I believe that's coming this week. So look for a redesign of the Academy. I believe that's coming this week. We've been testing, we've been working out the bugs, but it's going to be an incredible experience. You're going to be able to create playlists, bookmarks, I think we're calling it, of all the content you want because there's so much of it at SBL. It's going to be a really awesome way to navigate the site. That is coming this week. I waffled for a minute because I wasn't sure if the date on my sheet here was actually correct, but I do believe it's going to be this week. So make sure to check that out. Okay, it's enough of me. Let's get into this interview with Amos Heller. Well, you know, it's funny. I was actually on an SBL call this morning where I was talking about, you know, we were like going through and doing like, oh, you know, what are we doing for the week? We do this thing. Mm-hmm. It's called All Hands. And I said, I'm going to be doing this thing with Amos Heller from Taylor Swift. And I said, you know, you were nice enough to get me and my family into that show, which I will never be able to repay you for. It was incredible. Oh, dude, yeah.
Oh, it's great having
incredible.
You there.
Incredible. And then I said, you know, this is a guy who has the biggest gig in the world. And then it gave me pause. I was like, yeah, that's true. Do you think about that? Do you ever think about that? You have the biggest gig in the world. You do.
If you want to know that, I sometimes say it out loud to myself. Yes, I do.
I can't believe it.
I do. No, it's, I mean, probably once a week, something about it just comes up and kind of in the best way sort of flicks me in the nose. Like this is the thing that happened. And it's a tremendous reminder of like it doesn't get a lot bigger or better than this. So you'd better have fun. Like if you're not at this moment, like actively enjoying like what you're doing and what's going on, like, of course there's, you know, with anything, you know, that great joke, if you want to hear a musician complain, just hire them and then it'll just take off.
I've never
there's
heard
always
that.
Difficult
funny.
Stuff. Yeah. It's great. There's like anything, there's early lobby calls, there's, you know, being away from home and all that stuff. But like,
yes.
What you get to do when it's time to go to work is this just thing that I don't know if I really realize like what we're doing until we're done, like with like looking back on it in some sense, because it's like when we go on stage, like I've got a job to do, I've got like stuff
to
focus on.
Yeah.
And just occasionally, just sort of, you know, take a breath, take a drink of water, and just look around at this absolutely yes. immense thing. And I really try to like summon and maintain just kind of the wonder of it, of anyone who's able to just like make music a career and make it make sense
yes.
in their life. And like most folks, I spent a lot of years working a job so I could do music, or, you know, having a day job that was flexible and that, you know, use food service or Starbucks, something that can work around weird schedules or needing weekends off and all that kind of stuff. And just to do music as a job is wild. And then all of this other stuff on top of it is,
yeah,
it's absurd. It's crazy. And it's really, really fun. Like I actively enjoy it.
I can
pretty
tell.
Much all the time. Yeah.
I mean, and you know, and it was so fun to go out and get to spend some time with you the next day. Amos and I went out and we, you know, we like hit up a sushi restaurant. I brought some basses and we played and hung out. And I mean, it was so fun, dude. And
it was great, man.
And I can tell that you feel grateful, that you're trying to let it in. But I mean, on a very much smaller scale, with Eric Hutchinson, we went out and we supported Kelly Clarkson and we were in some big venues.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I remember thinking, stay grateful, because once you've seen the inside of a big, big, big sports arena, you've kind of seen them all in a sense. Like, I feel like there's just one or two contractors that build those things, and it becomes a little bit like Groundhog Day, right?
It can
like,
be.
It gets a little samey. And so to stay in it, right, to stay grateful, to not feel the sort of like, where are we at again today? Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, that has to, even though it's the biggest gig, right? And it's an incredible opportunity, it can be difficult to stay present mind.
Sure. Yeah. I definitely had mornings where I wake up and like, you know, I have to like look at my phone. It's like, where exactly are we? And it can be what is really nice though, is like taking the effort to like with you, like see some friends, go out, see some local like art, cuisine, coffee shop, museum, anything. And that's one of my favorite things about touring is you just get to see the country. You get to see the world, gain some perspective on where you're from or where you live. Everything looks a little bit different when you come home. And they're like, I don't know, this hit hard. That scene in Almost Famous, like towards the end where he walks into his bedroom and sees his bed and goes, like seeing, you know, like a long lost friend of yours. Everything is comfortable. Everything is super efficient, but for me, it's like my family and the crush and insanity of my kids, like
of
coming
course.
And screaming in the door, like coming back to that is always so great. But every time I leave, I get to go somewhere cool and do an amazing thing and make people happy. There's not a lot of folks that can say that about their line of work. Musicians are one of the few, like, you know, like plenty of folks, the firefighters, doctors, like I'll go to my job and make the world slightly measurably better. It's a, right. It's an awesome thing.
It is an awesome thing. And I mean, it was wild to see that show and just the excitement. I mean, you know, where we were at, I think there were close to 70,000 people there. I think the stadium holds 66 in seats, US Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. And I mean, you know, and then the floor of course is packed and it was just. There's so many questions I have. And, you know, I know, because we talked about this and I know there's certain things that you won't be able to answer because this, you know, the TS, the Taylor Swift camp be tight lidded about some things. So if I ask you something that you can't answer, you just let me know.
Sure. Sure. Our strike team will be at your location and
the dart goes in.
Yeah.
It's over.
5, 4, 3.
You know, it's funny, man. The one thing, you know, when I talked about, we went out to the sushi restaurant, I have to say, like, so Amos, you know, like he plays the show on Friday. We go out on Saturday before the show and I take you to that place, Sushi Train, right? That I love. Oh, yeah. And there's a restaurant manager there named Winnie, who is so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Winnie's never going to listen to this podcast, but if she does, Winnie,
let's talk about her.
Check
yeah, Winnie's
out.
The best.
The best moment is I brought these bass guitars. I think I brought three basses in for Amos to check out. I brought
certainly
in
did,
a Spectre.
Yeah.
I brought in that Mike Lull bass. I brought in a Wall. And we ate sushi, bust them out, and we start playing basses. Just like I felt shame about thinking about bringing them in. But once I brought them in, I'm leaving the shame at the door.
Too late.
And, too late. Yeah, it's too late. And Winnie comes over and says, and I will never forget it as long as I live. She says, "Oh, it's so nice to see that you boys have a hobby." And it just killed me. It killed me. And then, I looked at her and then I didn't say anything. And I looked at Amos who responded beautifully with, "Well, I hope to make it professional one day." And it, dude. It warmed my heart. It was amazing. Do you ever feel like incognito in this gig? Like you yourself aren't Taylor Swift, obviously.
No.
You play for her, but you don't have the same. You get to live a normal life in a sense.
Yeah.
Right. Like you can go out to a restaurant. She cannot. You have some anonymity. In a sense, or some freedom to go do normal things. Does that ever dawn on you when you're out on the road that you get to have kind of a normal life?
It does. I don't really have much of a thing to compare it to. Thankfully, I can definitely say that like fame was something I was much more excited about, like early on, as far as like when you're getting going, anyone you're aware of is usually famous, unless it's like someone local that you happen to know as a teacher, mentor, or like a player in your hometown. So anyone, the people I all aspired to be or be like Flea, Billy Gold, Cliff Burton, they're famous people. So I was like, well, that's what I want to do what they do, which means being famous.
Right.
And that's certainly a thing that has cooled off for me as it's gone along. It's really kind of nice to have a very specific, literal space that I enter into, and I am part of this massive thing, and I am there's, you know, any number of people could be conceivably looking at me at this time, like when I'm on stage. The second I walk off stage and change out of a black t-shirt, I'm walking right by people, and if they recognize who I am, they're, you know, polite enough not to say anything. Not that I don't like meeting people, which I really do.
Sure.
But sometimes I've gotten that question before. It's like, do people recognize you, like going to the grocery store? And the answer is almost never.
Sure.
Which I like, because it's very fun to go out and be part of the thing, part of the massiveness of it. And to, you know, I remember the first gig I had where there was a line out the door, and like, that's great. And now we're doing gigs where there are news helicopters like circling the venue. Like that's new.
It's insane.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yes. And just like none of them are there for me. And like, that's great. Like I have the job to do. I have my stuff to focus on. And then this very like specific, there are parameters around this place of visibility where we're out doing the thing and you're like pointing to people and they're excited that you're interacting with a fan while you're playing. And then you walk backstage, change clothes, walk out with your backpack on, and you're just, you're another, like, and, another person. It's really nice just to be able to, like, yeah, just disappear. It's great.
It's like you're a secret agent,
it
dude.
It was just about to say that. It is little secret thing. Like, you know, in the elevator is tons of fans with all the stuff on. And they're like, you guys going to the show? They're like, yeah, you're going. It's like, yeah, I might be going. You know, it's kind of obnoxious. It's
just
right up there with, I hope to do it professionally someday, but it's, it's really cool. Everybody, like, they're just the best. And it's what it's nice too, is like, if you recognize me, mm-hmm. you're a big enough fan of the music that it's exciting. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're aware of who anyone in any artist's band is, you're, yeah. you're in deep, and then it's cool. So I have, like, yeah. just the good stuff, really just the upside has been yeah. my experience.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's so cool. And I love, you know, the merch hunter stuff you do on your Instagram, oh, yeah. where you're taking pictures of people in the merch. I mean, the merch yeah. engine is just unreal. There's so many things about the production and about that tour that I want to ask you, but I do need to remember that this is a bass podcast, and something yeah. that I do think that everybody would be so interested in is, and you spoke to me about this when we were driving around, is just this sort of shift over the last few years from you being predominantly only electric bass to mm-hmm. boy, I mean, I don't know, half and half electric bass, key bass. Is that yeah, a fair assessment? Is it half and half?
It's funny, cause I talk about that a lot, and I've never actually sat down and done any kind of actual calculation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's probably about a third. I would say, yeah, like
okay.
a third key bass, and two thirds electric bass. And then sometimes switching back and forth within a song, which is its own sort of adventure.
Oh, man.
But yeah, the whole journey to, like, having the opportunity to learn to do this entirely new thing that I don't think I would call myself a bass purist, but it was never, I was aware of it, but I'm like, I'm here. I want to play electric bass. This is what I've already, you know, I always think of it in video games terms. I've pumped so many points into this specific skill. I'm just going to keep yes. going. And then, right. and then music comes in front of you with, like, well, the low end information from this is a DX7. It's a Prophet. It's a Juno. Like, it's time to learn, like, how to do this. And it was definitely a challenge. And it's just
yes.
great to have the opportunity to prove you can do something else. Cause I can play, like, singer songwriter acoustic guitar. I know, you know, enough chords to kind of get by, but to be in the middle of something high profile and professional and have a brand new instrument put in front of you and say, you do this now too. Like, that was, it was great. I was kind of resistant to it at first. And then, like, live, you just, these thunderous, beautifully sustaining, crushing low stuff, you're just, like, with one finger, that's its own kind of, like, really yeah. satisfying thing.
It's
great, yeah, just, man. Like, it's really fun,
and the whole place yeah. just levitates.
Yeah.
It's like just incredible. I mean, the mix of that show was so good, and the low great. End felt so even but, like, supportive and big. It was really wonderful. I mean, when you're playing that synth based stuff and learning it, right? I mean, and it's so cool. Like, you mentioned three keyboards. You mentioned a DX7. You mentioned a Prophet. You mentioned a Juno.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of that knowledge had to come pretty quickly, right? And how are you getting the knowledge of the specific synthesizers? Is that, like, oh, it's probably this kind of sound? Are you seeing stems?
That may be a dart in the neck kind of question as far as, because, like...
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. maybe I get, like, not unlike a cat, a certain amount of lives, you know, before, right. like, dart in the neck, before Amos is like, this, like, is over, click, and hangs, like, up.
That's it. Boom.
Okay, but it's safe to say that you had a learning curve, yes. right? And you had to learn how to figure this out.
Right. And I what I definitely can say is any category that you're not immediately familiar with kind of flattens. Like, if you don't like metal, mm-hmm. metal is metal. It's all, it all sounds the same, you know, hardcore, yeah. metalcore, thrash, death. It's all just, it's like, if you're into it, you're like, no, these are actually very different. I can sketch you the whole exhausting family tree of the whole thing. Yes. So I think that was kind of like, for me, like key bass is key bass. I don't know. It's not electric bass. I'm not as excited to watch it as a bass player in the audience. I'm like, boo.
Yes.
But it's right. been really fun to start building a vocabulary in like what a Moog does and what a Juno does and what a Prophet does. And they're all like they're different. They're all different. They have these little quirks about how the keys work, the action, what they're even like to physically behold like that.
Yeah.
Having to learn all that stuff. And it's just, again, it's just a forest of knobs. I don't know what any of this stuff does, but the more you start getting your hands and just spending time messing with it, it starts to kind of come forward.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
like I was saying, like the ADSR part is like, oh, I know what that is. I can feel it. I know what it does to a sound.
Yes.
And ultimately, like, what's the point? Like, I can express myself with this thing now, like a low pass filter, a high pass filter. I do a lot of like, I'm playing and messing with filters while I'm playing.
Of course.
And it's like, it's great to go from, you know, indifference to, you know, slight mystery to initiate and then to expression, which, you know, is the goal of pretty much anything. Like getting to, I would like the sound to be a little bit wilder. This would be more fun if it had a softer attack. I want this to arpeggiate. And
yes.
What's the point is like, the moods, the feelings, the reactions that can create in anybody who's listening. And that having the opportunity to do that like at work, and I'm surrounded by experts. So folks who are so good
yes.
at it, you know, you hit like kind of a wall. I mean, there's always YouTube, but like you hit kind of a wall. Like I can't get this, do this. There's a lot of shoulders to tap on. Somebody can show you how to route your LFO or do your, you know, set your filter so that it's doing the thing that you want. That's my other favorite part about it is like a lot of really, really qualified, experienced people with sort of a teacher's bearing who want to do it. Because also I want to take stuff off people's plate. I want to do this. This, if I'm standing in front of it, I want it to feel like home. So
yes,
having the help, having the time and the opportunity. And then also like the assignment, like this is what's happening now. Let's get literate at it. Let's get going.
Well, and it's so cool too that the camp seems from the outside to be really invested in having humans do the job versus then just putting everything in tracks. You put everything in tracks, right? I mean, you could. And it's cool that camp doesn't. It's so cool that you're playing because you just feel it on stage, like watching the band, everybody's doing something. You can tell that they're monsters, every single one of you.
Yeah.
And that's so, and even if you're not a muso and you're not there to check out the band, you know, you're there to hear these, you know, 40 some giant hits being sung by this incredible artist, like you feel the connectivity. Like it doesn't just feel like the record is playing through a big PA. It feels like analog and beautiful. And I mean, it's palpable. I want you to know that. And I know you do know that.
Oh man,
but it really is.
It's so great to hear. And that's the thing. Like there's human beings. The band are just some of the best musicians I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
It really just feels great to have everybody pushing at this thing using their own, cause like everybody comes from a slightly different, place of like the stuff they grew up in, like in their heart of hearts. Here's somebody who is jazz and R&B based, you know, here's a guy who grew up listening to Rush and Yes. I started playing classical. I started playing thrash metal. Like I love the crazy Chiopino that makes out of everybody's, all these weird flavors that just come together. Again, maybe it's not hopefully it's not something that leaps out to somebody who's listening, but it just kind of gently informs everything that's going on. It just feels huge. The whole thing feels huge to be a part of.
For sure. Having like hands and voices do the work is you can tell it's cool. Before you mentioned like, you know, what you grew up listening to, and I want to dive into that a little bit because I think it's so cool. Sure. But before we go there, it's funny because you mentioned this acronym when you're talking about synths. And when you mentioned it to me when we were driving around, I almost did the thing of like, oh yeah, of course I know what that means. But I've been really trying. I've been really trying lately in my life to, if I don't actually know what something means, I'll say, hold on, what is that? And it's ADS. Yeah. No, what was it?
ADSR.
ADSR. Yeah,
that's. And if anyone is thinking about getting into bass synth, this is the first most. It's most directly affecting like the sound that you're doing. So it stands for attack, decay, sustain, and release.
Yes.
And it's the shape of what happens when you press the key. So a short attack goes bam. A long attack goes like sort of
yes.
ramps up. And it's mainly to do with volume, the volume of the note. Yeah. And then like, does it go like, does it hit and then go down and sustain, or does it taper off? So does it taper at all? Mm. And then like release when you let up, does it go knee or does it go knee?
Right.
Like slowly, slowly decay. So that's those that almost any synth you're going to mess with has, it can call like, it's like amp ADSR just says ADSR attack, decay, sustain and release. Start messing with those. That's like day one. Get yourself a Moog, Subfatty, or an Ovation base station. Start messing around with those four things. And it's really cool how you can make the note do what you want, even if you don't know like what an LFO is, a filter is, any of that stuff. ADSR is the great, it's where I started. And it's a great place to like immediately get the idea, because the crazy thing about synthesis, playing synths of any kind, that I was surprised when it became time to start doing it, was not just the facility at the keyboard, playing the right notes and thinking about notes laid out left to right rather than, sort of in this kind of, I don't know, depending how you think about your, in a vertical space versus horizontal, however it is that you think about it.
Right.
But then crafting the sounds themselves is a big part of it. You know, because like, I mean, we know as bass players, you don't just like show up to a session with a bass, like you have to have gear and know how it works and how to craft something to fit the song. And synth is the exact same. It was just like, I brought all the basic musicianship that I've picked up over the years, you know, timing and note length dynamics and all that stuff. But everything else, I felt like I was starting over in this whole, this very new instrument. It's not just a different version of electric bass. It's the difference between electric guitar and acoustic guitar. They're strung the same.
So
they make some of the same
sound.
They are different instruments completely. And the more of that you bring to it.
Upright and electric bass, right?
Yes. Yes. Those are, there's a lot of stuff that translates, a lot of stuff that you know, the Venn diagrams overlap, but if you think about them as different instruments, you'll be a little bit happier.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have in synth world, you mentioned like, you know, get a Moog, Subfatty, get a Novation base station or something. Mm-hmm. In all your time doing this, do you have a favorite? Is there a sound, like if you had to pick one, like you've mentioned a lot of keyboards, you know, like if you had to have one that inspires you the most or you think makes the coolest sounds. And if someone wants to get into this, what would you recommend they get?
Man, I love the Juno. It's such a cool, I'm trying to think it like, I can rattle off a lot of stuff, but my deep sort of brand knowledge is a little less, but find you, and there's lots of emulators online. You don't have to like the Junos themselves, like the classic vintage ones can be expensive, difficult to maintain. Yeah. There are great soft synth emulators. You can just download, use as plugins on whatever DAW and just get a, you know, $90 MIDI controller and just bring up some of those sounds. The Juno is just, the Juno and the Prophet are the two that I would start with. They're beautiful, recognizable, very three-dimensional sounds. They were a lot of fun. And it's like, and it's that same thing. Once you sort of get an ear for, when you start like getting the Juno vibe, you start listening to pop music. You're like, there's one, there's one, there's one. It's something that's been cool for a really long time. It has a lot of staying power, and the time you invest in learning how to use it will pay back. Cause it does, it's not just bass too. It does great lead stuff, pads, deep synths, arpeggiations, crazy filter stuff. It's, but to start with, they're like in the soft synth that I use, there are these great presets, like just bass, ass, bass, bang. And you're like, yep, you're off and running.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's
presets.
So cool.
Don't be afraid of presets, man.
Yeah, of course, because then you can use them as a jumping off spot, right? Uh-huh. And it's just like, you know, you talk about the vocabulary of understanding a sound, right? Like, oh, there's a Juno. Oh, there's that classic Moog drop or whatever. It's the same as when you're playing electric bass. You're like, oh, that's a P bass, you know, right? You're like, oh man, there's like, that's a jazz bass bridge pickup sound, that Jaco thing. You know, the more you get into it, the more you start to be able to decode all of that stuff. And it's not dissimilar to that electric bass thing. That's cool. It was inspiring, man. It was really inspiring for me to see you do that, because I bought a Moog long ago thinking, well, this is going to be very easy. I remember thinking to myself, this is going to be very simple, you know, and I already know how to play the bass, and I play a little upright bass too. And so I thought this is going to be child's play. And I remember getting in and I just sounded awful and I didn't know what anything did. And it was so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's honestly the thing that led me to just doing all the stupid crap I do of like plugging. Well, no, I shouldn't. I like the
pedal, your stuff is great. I absolutely love it. I am super inspired by it. I have ripped you off more times than I can count. It is brilliant. It's like, I just need to cover this sound rather than do an entirely new signal chain instrument I'm not super familiar with. I know my way around a fuzz pedal, a delay pedal, an octave pedal, and I can subscribe to the Scott's Bass Lesson YouTube and watch all of Ian's content on that is great. It's a great workaround. You need it for one sound, one chorus. You're like, no, I can cover this. I got it. But the crazy thing is, I was thinking this because my son's taking piano lessons. Like, the great thing about piano, and I think one of the reasons everybody starts on it is, and I don't think I'm going to disrespect keys player for one second because it's a nightmare, is you can get a sound out of piano right away. You press down on a key, a sound comes out. That's it.
That's right.
Basses, guitars, fiddle, bagpipes. It takes technique with both hands to get a note, unless you're just strumming an open string, like to get a sound out of it, you have to know what you're doing. You have to have left hand strength. You have to have technique here, technique here. It starts changing right away. A keyboard, you press a sound comes out.
Yes.
Where that gets made up for is how many of them you can press at the same time. And then for a synth, all these little knobs up here, they're like, oh, you thought you got off easy? Get to work.
Yeah, of course.
But
you're right. It's immediate. You get some like immediate satisfaction. It's like an instant gratification, at least.
Yeah.
Right. When you push that thing down, a sound plays. Yeah.
And a pretty one. Like, you know, you do any two keys together. Like, there's something I've already made a statement. Like, my kids will come up and just like mash six different keys. I think this is funny. So I run it through main stage and there's a little window up top that'll very helpfully tell you what chord you're playing.
Oh,
you know,
cool.
You just like, it'll say like F7 add to or whatever. So like, you know, Max just goes, does the whole thing. It's like, he played something, you know, F sharp 7 flat 3. Yeah. This is Karl Heinz Stockhausen there on the keyboard, but it's like, you can get something out of it right away.
Yeah.
But it's, man, I tell you what is crazy is, and I know you know what I'm going to say, like on a Keybase Pocket. Now Pocket is this, it's not this, you're not muting notes with letting up with your left hand. There's no palm muting. Anything you want to do to make it sound different, you've got to tell it exactly what to do and be pretty precise. And then there's the action and velocity, attack, all that stuff on the keys, any aftertouch stuff. It's so deep, just in a slightly different direction than people who are used to playing an acoustic instrument will find.
String.
Yes, right. Because that's all physics. It's all pendulum vibration, and this is weird for me. I'm still getting my brain around how, like, when you, no matter how far up you go on a keyboard, the keys are the same space apart.
Yeah, versus frets.
I'm just used to that logarithmic thing with frets where they get like slightly close together. I was like, no, you just literally just move your hand over, and it's the exact same thing. I have this instinct to like try to pinch my hand together as I go up further.
Dude, that's great.
They should make a keyboard like that. Then the keys get like tiny up. And...
Just show the keyboard players like a little bit of our pain. Just like,
But there's like an upright key basing. You have to get in thumb position to like actually get like high notes out of it.
Dude, I love it. Oh my God. That's great.
You have to hold down this lever if you want to play the keys like above like the third octave or whatever.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, it's time to put some pain back in that. Well,
yeah, it's just no harder. Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's like you talk about Pocket, and that's something too. Like, I played Moog on a couple of gigs just dubiously. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was always ahead. I was always like, you know, hitting that key. I knew where okay, those are my three keys, you know, like in the day, I would mark them down, you know, I'd put a C and a D and an E.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like I would hit them, but I always felt a little on top. And I've always, you know, felt like, oh boy, I've got good time on the electric bass. And it really was. Wow, it was difficult. It was more like playing drums, like committing to that spatial, you know, that strike, right?
A fast strike is a confident move. Yes. And then against that, depending on your sound, now you got to think about like the, because you have different, you can have the filter, which is, you know, sort of the wow of it. Like the, you know, like it's like think of like an auto wall or an envelope filter. You can, that synths have that too. And you can set it to react to velocity. So the harder you play a key, the more something opens up,
snaps into a filter.
Yes, exactly. So it's essentially, it's like, it's no different than how, like, you and I both know, like moving moving your hand half an inch,
sure,
left and right from where you're striking on the string can change it. It's exactly like that. It's just with a synth, it's all electronic and sort of ones and zeros, data driven, and you just got to know how to communicate. You got to know what you want, and then which of these 35 knobs that all look exactly the same does the thing that you want it to do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and so will you bring this? I mean, I feel like I could just talk to you forever about synth bass, and I promise I'll move off of it. But will you bring this into other things in your life? Like, have you already used this outside of Taylor Swift in terms of like writing your own material or playing with anyone else? Is it something that you've used?
Oh yeah. Extracurricularly? Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Big time. All the music that I compose for the stuff I do on YouTube, like just being able to, or anything I just feel like doing myself.
Yeah.
Like I said, like knowing that I can pop open. And so I use Logic, which I just love as far as my DAW. And it comes with a ton of synths. It has the EXS24, the ES2. It has a great like retro synth on it.
Yeah.
Alchemy is amazing. It's one of my favorites to use. And just like you said, so going back to something you said, like getting to presets and thinking about a preset as a place to get started, like a bookmark in a very thick book.
Sure.
So like I've got this really cool sound. Oh my God, the release is too long. And I think there was a day where I might've just kept scrolling until I found something perfect. And you know, I think in Alchemy, I'm going to guess probably has like 2,000 or 3,000 presets. There's just so many.
Crazy.
And each preset has like 8 sub presets, like the dark version, the you know, slow decay saw oscillator version.
Yes.
Like just being able to get something that's inspiring. Oh, that sounds cool. And then getting it to like getting a filter to like settle down or getting it to arpeggiate. I absolutely like just being able to look at a synth and, like I said, have parts of it come forward. And now I get to create on it. I can express myself with it. So my keyboard knowledge is getting better and better. I even like, this is a weird thing, like on just, this is a, you know, big keyboard side thing, but you can play, diatonically sequential notes in a chord and you can't do that on bass. Like you can play C, D and E all at the same time. And it's this beautiful, like,
yes,
thick thing that again, like I'm very used to, like part of me wants to go, this is an electric bass. You just lay it flat. And that's the whole, it's the same approach, same idea. It's like, no, there's all like. A blues scale looks very different on a, and it just moves very left to right. Like I'm used to one that moves up and down as well as back and forth, even spatially,
right?
Perpendicular.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm a huge fan of anything. I've been playing for a long time. Like you have your usual, your go-tos, your licks, your fills, your ideas, anything that makes those impossible and pushes you out of it and forces you to think about something new. I'm just at a point in my life where I'm so excited by that. Like this is, I know I've never done this. I know this is a challenge. I know if I have time and YouTube on my side, I know I can get my brain around this.
Yes.
And it can take some patience and to enjoy like the process of it. And even if you walk away going, I didn't get what I wanted, but I put in my first hour and I never have to do that again. If I come back tomorrow, that first hour is already done.
You've got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's really inspiring to me. And, you know, I feel like we came from a similar spot. Like, I'd love for you to talk just a bit too about like where, how this came up for you in terms of like bass playing at all. And you were in Cincinnati, right? I mean, I remember you telling me that you played in this funk band in Cincinnati and that like, man, I love, you said, you talked about this quote where someone said, you know, asked you what you wanted to do. And you said you wanted to, you know, play with great artists and big gigs. And what was the quote? Do you remember the quote?
Oh, so this is, I saw this in a book after I moved to Nashville.
Okay.
And it just said, if you want to hunt tigers, you have to go where there are tigers. And I have spoken to, I have a lot of friends who are successful musicians. I take whatever time I can when folks are beginning on that road or part way down and where they're not feeling like it's happening for them and they want to talk to somebody who's had some success with it. And like, how do I do it? What, I mean, I don't know how true this is anymore because of the internet. It's like, go somewhere where the thing you want to do is happening. Being there, so being in the room. I even think about like, how much time I've gotten to spend around really, really good musicians of any stripe, drummers, musical directors, keyboard players, just being around them and watching how they conduct themselves is huge. Just like take, you know, like going out for coffee and asking someone career advice. That's great. That's a good idea. Do that 100% of the time. The worst they can say is no.
Sure.
But going to see this person's show, watching them do something that they love, not necessarily even like this is my main gig, my money gig, my name gig, watching them do something they're doing just for fun, watching how they do that. That's the sauce. And I do think that if what you're after is something like being a sideman, which is what I am, which a lot of my friends are, that going to a place, a major metropolitan area where folks are doing the thing you want to do is pretty big. We're talking New York, Nashville, Los Angeles, Chicago, Austin. Like there's every town has a scene.
Yes.
But you want to be where the tour buses are leaving from, not where they're showing up to unload.
Right. Absolutely. Because it's part of it too is, you know, you become part of this culture, and then how easy is it to get you on that tour bus? If it's difficult, if it's a long flight away, right. There might be somebody else. Right? Who wants it? Yeah.
I did have a conversation with somebody a long time ago who was like, right when things were like starting to take off, we were starting to have like some success, and they were saying they were from somewhere like not that far away. It was like Bowling Green or, you know, Memphis, you know, close to Nashville where I am now.
Yeah.
And he was saying, he's like, man, I would come down every weekend just to do the thing. And I remember thinking like, show me a romantic partner who's going to let you love them on the weekends.
Oh yeah.
Like you have to commit to the thing. And
yeah,
I believe, and this is probably true for a lot of things, like the way you treat musicianship is the way it's going to treat you. And if you just want to do it because you love it, it feels good to have a bass in your hands, you want to play blues with your buddies, the world needs it. Go do it. If it's the thing that gives you joy, that is more than sufficient. That's beauty. That's art. That's authenticity. Go do it. If what you want to do is professional, then you need to do it like a professional would do it. Like do your homework, show up on time. You know, like be cool. Not like be a cool dude, but like let as much go as possible, because it's a weird life, especially while you're leveling up and things are, there's a lot to deal with. And the more chill you can, because you're living with people, if you get to a point where you're on a tour bus, you are in close proximity to people for a lot of the time. And you're only playing with them.
Yes.
Maybe 2 hours a day. And you are living with them the other 22. That like being a relaxed person, I was sort of happy to see that the hometown hero who sort of looks down on everybody else and is the hot business wherever they came from, and you can't tell them anything. That's not the folks who move to cities and find work.
It's so true.
It's folks with some humility, good work ethic, professional aspect, real enthusiasm and joy for what you're doing. And we're going to assume that you have facility on your instrument, but it's a lot of it is about the hang. So it's about meeting people, finding a group of people if you feel comfortable with and get to know. And those are the people, if you handed me the keys, I'm hiring people I know who I'm friends with, who I know can handle the gig and are fun to hang around with.
Of course, because it's like, I know that thing as well from, you know, doing stuff with Eric Hutchinson. He'll ask me, you know, like when our regular drummer couldn't do it, he was like, who do you know in Minneapolis? I mean, it went to me.
Yeah.
And it was wild to see the power of that, of like, oh, it's relational. Who do I want to be around? Who do I think is going to interact with the artist in the way that I want? And of course, of course, that's the deal.
Yeah.
I have never heard. Yeah.
Oh, I have a early days of Nashville story that's pursuant to this, and I want to hear what you're going to say.
Please.
So I was at, it's one of the first like gigs I ever got, and it was because I moved here with a bunch of people who all like sort of had the same goal. There was a guy named Tony Lopachinsky, who is a raging guitar player in the town Charlottesville where I'm from. He was a side guy for Train for a long time, and a blistering original artist, and he really brought a bunch of us here and like was one of the first people I had contact with, a huge mentor. Unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago, but like, I don't think any of us would be doing this sort of without him. Anyway, so I moved here with a pretty solid network of people who I at least knew, got on a gig for a singer-songwriter who wanted to do a full band showcase. The drummer was the first guy with a Nashville gig I'd ever really met. And I was like, there's one. Like, I'm in the room. There's one right there. You know, like, right. I feel like having a deer in the house. Like, don't spook it. Just be calm. Like, just chill. This is this. Yes. I'm sweating bullets inside. Like, this is the audition that I've been thinking about. I've only been in town like 2-3 months. Of course, he's like, you end up becoming like one of my best friends. Anyway, so he's cool. The band leader for another country artist. You know, a bus gig, the thing that, like, this is what I moved here to do.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of rehearsal. We're working through this stuff. And he gets a phone call. He's like, hang on. I got to take this. It's band related. He goes outside and talks to somebody for like 10 minutes. He walks in, sits down on his drum throne, kind of heavily. He goes, my fiddle player just quit. Any of you guys know a fiddle player? Whoa. And I was like, that's how it happens. It's that. Because he also, yes, like, you don't want to do a cattle call that's going to take 5 days and get, no, you know, 300 people. That's a big outlay of time, energy, and money for management. And they don't want to do that. And I was like, wow. So, like, if his bass player had just quit, it's entirely possible he would be like, hey, man, you looking for a gig? Like,
it could
just,
exactly.
I was like, oh, man. Okay. So I, yes, never showed up to a rehearsal with anything less than all of my homework done, lyrics memorized if I need to. That's my thing. Like, I over-prepared for everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you would have to. Like, you can't be the guy with the gig that you have that kind of half-asses it. There's no way. There is no way to get where you, yeah, are with kind of like, I think I'll kind of learn it first week of tour.
Yeah.
Can you, God, give us a through line of – I don't actually think I've ever heard you talk about it. And apologies, because I'm sure you've told it a lot. But can you give us a through line from Nashville, from moving to Nashville to Taylor Swift?
I can. And the short version is it is connections. It was, yes, just folks that I knew who knew me. I can't tell the story of how I got Taylor's gig without telling someone else's story for them. So I will just say that.
that's my second dart, dude. That's my second dart.
That's two, bud. okay, let me.
I am going to be very cautious now. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like flower trucks just like circling your house. Four of them. Like, what? The Simpsons of Flowers by Irene.
Trucks before. Yes.
I will say this, and this sounds like more of a flex than I mean it, because I don't think this makes me special. When I went from gig to gig, I never really auditioned. Like in a formal sense, come in and let's see how you do.
Yes.
I got called for a gig. So there's a guy named Rhett Akins. So that I'll tell this story. This is the first artist gig I got. Rhett Akins is a country singer, country songwriter, had like a lot of hits in the 90s, but like still pretty busy. And a friend of mine was leaving. He had some family issues he had to go take care of. So he's like, I'm the bass player is leaving. A guy that I knew, one of the first guys I met when I moved to town, a guy named Bobby Dancy, who was also one of the first people that I was like, I didn't know what Nashville was going to be like. And when you're in Cincinnati, where you can just sort of like see Nashville sort of over the crest of the hill.
Yeah.
In my mind, it was a cutthroat shark tank of wall to wall monsters. It's just, you know, like,
yes,
just you go to Starbucks drive through and it's Victor Wooten handing you your coffee. Like, it's just like that. Like, yeah. And I was like, and I used to joke kind of self-effacing when I moved to town. I was like, yeah, I'm sure, you know, I moved to town to play bass. I'm sure the last thing this town needs is another bass player. And three or four people in a row, I was like, well, we need more good ones. You know, so I stopped making the jokes. Like, do you believe in yourself or not? You're here to do it or not? So Bobby had decided to leave the gig. And he put my name in the hat, as they say. And at that time, I was playing at the honky tonks down on Lower Broadway, which is this big main strip. Mm. Sort of like the Times Square of Nashville. And there's just now there's 20 or 30 bars. There's bands playing in them all the time. Used to be way fewer, and it was country music only. Now it's become a lot more broad. It's a bigger tourist destination. You can hear, you're just as like to hear Don't Stop Believing as you are These Boots Are Made for Walking. And
sure. Yes.
He asked the guy putting my name. He's like, where can I go see Amos play country music? Because Rhett's stuff is 90s country. It's pretty country. So he's like, well, he plays at the Second Fiddle 2 to 6 every Wednesday. And that was my audition. He came and watched me at a gig. And it was like a gig is an audition, full stop, every time. And then when I got the call for Rhett, So his band leader came to see it, handed me his card. It's like, we're looking for a bass player. Here's the thing. I would say my audition for that gig was the rehearsal. So we, like, here's our, you know, whatever, 75 minute set. Here's all these songs. I went and just, you know, learned them backwards and forwards. And the audition was the rehearsal. We showed up and just like played through a bunch of songs, like two or three songs in the row. And eventually the MD was like, are you good? I was like, I'm good if you're good. He's like, do you know the rest of the songs, like the three we just played? I was like, yeah. He's like, okay, we can be done. Like, they like, you don't want to do all that much more work than you have
to. Sure.
The gig I got after that was the exact same way. The bass player left to go. It was, you know, a bit of, I used to call it the Nashville shuffle. Like every winter touring slows down a little bit. Somebody's feeling like making a change. They go somewhere and it sort of loosens up the whole, like,
yes,
like what are the little puzzles where you like flip the squares around until you make a picture of a cat. It's that.
Yes.
So it was like somebody else left a gig. I knew two or three players on the gig. They're like, I think you'll be, because there's stuff that's come up that I'm not a good fit for. That is more traditional. Bluegrass, need to play upright. They're looking for somebody older, someone with a different look. There's a lot of people that want to do it. So you can be picky and you can find just the right person. But finding a balance between being fluid and being, you know, like learning how to play a good country two feel. And then like all the other stuff I grew up with, like thrash metal and funk, like that's just sort of informs my own thing. But you want to be able to do it. Somebody calls, you know, like a Merle Haggard tune. You need to know enough of those to know, like, what's the approach? What's the tone? What's the feel? Right. What are the rules for this era of this thing? You want to be able to do that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
But then if you're looking for something long-term, something that's a really good fit, it's going to be about kind of who you are, how you play, and sort of what you look like. Like that has stuff to do with it too.
It's a big deal. Can you talk a little bit about that prep process? Were you doing, like, when you were preparing for that gig where you learned the 75 minute set, was that, were you memorizing? Were you charting? Were you charting first, then memorizing? Like, what does that look like for you? The preparation.
Something I would always recommend is learning a song, especially like an artist's song, like cover, if you know, like, I mean, covers can be their own thing, but like an artist, a showcase thing, if you get a demo that has like a bass part on it, learn it ice cold, get it exact as much as you can. Every fill, try to solve the puzzle of, are they shifting here or here? Does this sound like this is third fret on the A or whatever, there's like seventh or eighth on the E. Is that where they're playing it? Try to get that as much as you can. Because I got this from my friend Devin Malone, who's a blazing guitar player and was my roommate when I first moved to town. If the artist is most comfortable with it exactly like the record, you always want to be able to say yes. Can you do this exactly like the record? Absolutely. You want to be able to say yes. That takes homework. If they're like, this is going to be a little bit looser, you're in the rehearsal, the drummer is doing something different, follow that.
Right.
Read the room. Do the thing. The second anybody goes, I want this exactly like the record, you want to be able to say yes to that.
Yes.
I would recommend that because that'll make you learn the song deeply, and you'll find yourself cueing lyrics, cueing drum fills and stuff like that. And I also, this is a more recent thing to me, try to play it in the clear, not even wearing head. Pick up your bass in the room, count it off in your head, come when you're supposed to come in, see if you can play the whole thing with nothing.
Yes. And when I can like play it through, imagining it, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like, do you know? And that's like, and what I've figured out for me is that takes time. It just takes me a lot of time. I wish I was one of those folks who can hear a song two or three times and just do it. I'm not. I don't have a ton of formal musical training in that sense.
Sure.
And it's just, I haven't spent the time to really cultivate that skill. So I need time, and I can set myself a diet of about two songs a day. At that intensity, that I can learn all the way through ice cold.
Yes.
If I have a higher volume,
do you feel like you retain them? Then, like after that day, and you've got the two tunes, are they in there? Are they pretty like well locked in retention?
We are still doing it. If I'm doing it right, like I've got 10 songs to learn.
Yep.
I want them ice cold. The artist likes them exactly like the record. That's 5 days.
Yes.
For me, because that third song just isn't as good. I've tried it. It just, not only is the third song not as good, and then song one and two start suffering as well.
Interesting. Yes.
So we do, man, if I'm really after it, I'll do like during the day session is learning the two songs. So one and two, then three and four and five and six. And then like that night after the kids go to bed, repetitions, just run them all, run the set. get used to how it, you know, if we know the set order, get used to how it, the thing where you can hear the next song when the last song is over, yes, from like an album, oh, you know, or like a mixtape that you've really fallen in love, yes, with. Like I can hear the next one, because there's going to be variables on the day. There's going to be, your, yes, mix is going to be weird. There's a last second substitution. You may find that the singer, like maybe they don't have a ton of experience or they're having a rough day. You may find yourself leaning over to like whisper lyrics to them. Anything you can do to make the gig go better, you prepare. That's my approach broadly, is just take it as seriously as you can. And for me, it's just time and making sure I have the time to give the attention to the thing that it needs.
Yeah. So you're not ever approaching any kind of gig looking at charts.
I don't like to. I'm impressed with people who can read and play expressively, you know, session musicians. I saw a gig at the Baked Potato. I was watching Chris Chaney read. That's upsetting.
Yeah, he's just ferocious.
All this Martin Landau, I think it was like Martin Landau, Abe Jr., and Chris Chaney. And he's got his nose buried in a chart and just destroying it. I was like, man, I didn't know that was available. Like, I've got a whole brand new thing to be upset that I can't do. Like, look at yes, that. Right. I really like performing. I really have a lot of fun being on stage, living in the music, just, you know, carrying the energy of a crowd or a singer. And it's a little bit selfish. You can run it this way. I want to have fun. If I'm going to have fun, I need to be prepared. Yes. The more prepared I am, the more fun I have. It's very simple for me. And faking on bass is the worst thing in the world.
Oh, it's horrible.
It's like, because not
it's so
a verb.
Consequential. You know, it's like,
horrible. Oof, I did when I started playing down on Lower Broadway. So that those gigs are tough because it's repertoire. Those folks know 500-600 songs, like, and that's off the top of your head. I mean, you have a chart book if you need to get to it. And there's folks that use iPads now, cheaters. And I did a lot of faking on bass, and it is hard. You kind of can't do it. Like I got to where I could recognize on the back of the acoustic guitar player's neck, like the angle of their thumb, like that's a G, that's a D. Yeah. Like I could kind of see it. I was like, oh, it's probably this. I did a lot of slides.
Oh yeah, right.
And trying to write a chart in your head as you do it, like. There's things, lyrics are probably the other thing that you just can't fake on. And I hate it. I don't have fun. It tears the band apart. You know, you go to your solo and I'm hitting the four instead of the one, you know, it's like, it just hits this huge speed bump. And it was just even just selfishly like getting through a faking gig downtown. It's a 4-hour shift. I remember I was just ride home in complete silence. Just
wow.
I ended up going to gigs. I had a chart, like a notebook with Nashville numbers charts. And then I had a little piece of paper next, or a little notepad next to it. Any song somebody called or even mentioned that I didn't know, I would write it down. And then I would go home, download it, make a chart for it. I just, getting caught with your pants down is the worst. And it's like,
that's the worst.
It turns this joyful, collaborative, beautiful experience that it, you know, it's live music, it's never going to happen exactly this way again, and just turns it into a, for me, it just turns it into a slog, and I'm just not having fun. So
I mean, the gig, I've said this before in a, you know, in a podcast, the gig is the reward. The gig is like the reward for the hard work. You put in the work so that then when you get on that stage, you can have fun. Like when I see you out there on those stages, widest stance, just throwing down, just putting your whole body and heart and soul into it. You can't do that if you're like, oh my God, where does it go in the bridge?
What's the bridge here? Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's so terrible. And I don't know about you, probably though, like I have had some of my lowest lows, highest highs, lowest lows on gigs where if I'm feeling unprepared, it is the worst. I'm like, I want to crawl under a rock and die, or just go back to school and be an accountant it's awful. And so, I think it's actually really important for people to hear you talk about the time it takes, because I do think there is this pervasive thought you know, when people are starting and they're seeing pros like you and they think, oh man, you know, I bet Amos just takes a look at those songs and, you know, kind of learns them quick. And there's also this weird thing when you're starting, oh, it's just pop music. So it's easy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's just country music. Oh, it's just rock music. Uh-huh. And dude, those players never get very far on the ladder, right? It's so much more complicated because if you blow a form, like that thing of here comes that big solo and you play the four instead of the five or whatever it is, those are really consequential things. And you have one job to do, God, right? There's like four notes probably you're playing in most tunes, or there's, you know, four chords. And so play the right fucking one, you know, and yet we let ourselves make those mistakes sometimes. And of course everybody makes them, but I love the fact that you're doing two tunes a day. Whenever I'm working on songs, I think I should, I need to get through the whole set. I should get four or five tunes done, and I'm bad at it. And so it actually is really helpful for me too, to hear you say two tunes a day, lock them down. That's what great advice. That's excellent advice.
And then reps after that. And then listening to it, like at the gym, like just getting it. If it's something unfamiliar, like just, you want it to be instinctive. I will tell the story. We were doing a gig downtown and somebody called Sultans of Swing, the Dire Straits tune.
Sure.
I'd never played it, but I grew up listening to it. I knew how it went. Yeah, I was like, oh, it's in D. I can do that. Like, I was like,
yes.
And I was like, do-do-do-do. I was like, that sounds like, I never charted it, but I can hear it. Here comes the one. I know how I was singing the guitar. So it's just like, it's that familiarity, that instinctive thing. So that was an example of like, I'm playing a song I've never played before, but you just know it so well. So I was like, I've never played this. This is actually really fun. The guitar player is really good. Band sounded really good. It's like, I've never got an opportunity to play this song that I really like. But that's the thing for me. It's the optimistic side is I want to have fun. And the sort of fear-based side is I will do anything to not just suffer and struggle on stage. That's also like an ego thing. Like, I don't want to be seen that way. I don't I hate how it feels. But yeah, I have made a lot of peace with like, it just takes me a lot of repetitions, because almost invariably too, I'll get to a point where I feel like I know the song, like I've got it. And then we're listening to it at the gym and something will go by. It's like, I didn't hear that. Never heard that before. So I sort of fall in love with like how I'm playing all over it. And it's hard for me some reason. When I get an idea, like I'm like 80%, 85% there, like I've got it pretty good, I can actively feel myself resisting. You know, at some point, you need to put the bass down and listen to it again.
Right.
And just listen.
That's really good.
Oh, here's another thing I do. This is a little trick. Is I'll still have the bass in my hands, listening on headphones, whatever. I turn the volume on my bass all the way down. Mm. And I mime the part. And if you hear something go by that you know, you can feel like, oh, I didn't just do that. That's good. I can kind of feel this. So that's a little bit of like, how are we doing? How cold do I have this? So I turn my bass all the way down and play through it, just listening to the track or whatever, the reference. And it's like, if I have it, I have it. But then that's a good way to like, because if you're like, you know, I play with my bass at a pretty high volume and it's entirely possible that I'm just blowing past something, playing over it, and I'm not hearing what the bass player is doing. But again, that's
you've got the progression, you've got the form, and now in that moment, you're kind of doing something that sounds great with the tune, actually, but it isn't the original thing. Yeah.
But it's not the thing.
Yes.
And it's humbling, and I've just started to like celebrate it, and I'll pick that up, and so I go, that was close. You know, like it'd be like, or I'm listening on the way to the rehearsal, I'm like, oh, whoops. It's like, oh, I come out for the first two bars, of course, too. Good to know.
Dude, I know from firsthand experience, because I've seen you now with Taylor twice, and I've seen you with Florida Georgia Line too. I saw you with Florida Georgia Line, and
that's right.
How you get in and how you interact, you're not looking always at your bass. You can tell that you've invested the time. Consummate Pro that is also exuding Rockstar vibes, like wide thanks, stance. Man. Like I told you this story, dude, of like when I first saw we had really good seats because I was there with a buddy who knew the guys in Need to Breathe. That was on Speak Now. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. The Speak Now tour?
Yes, okay. I believe that's correct. Yes.
And you, I was looking at you and I was thinking to myself, what would it be like to be that man? It was this before I knew you. I was like, oh, I wonder what it would be like. Like in kind of daydreaming, like, wow, that's so cool. And you mm-hmm. saw me look at you and you went, and you gave me the rock horns, dude. And I was like, ah, like he sees me. Like I thought it was invisible, you know, like a kid that was like, oh my God. Yeah. But I mean, it's so cool, dude, because I've seen you play enough now where I get it. I'm like, man, this guy is devoted to the craft. He's devoted to the gig. He's devoted to the artist and he's all in. And man, it's so inspiring to see. So it's so fun to get a peek behind the curtain, you know, just to hear about the process, that it's not just like, oh yeah, you know, I check it out on the way to the rehearsal. No, of course.
Oh yeah.
You're putting in the hard work. Yeah.
Yeah. I stay jealous of folks who can, who just like have that bandwidth, that ability, education, experience, just listening. I feel like keyboard players in particular, like studying like the types and shapes of chords. That's the whole bit. Like I see F sharp minor 7 add 9. I was like, so I'll just play an F sharp. Is that okay with everybody? Like, you know, like just going to play like the root note of the thing.
It's all good. Yeah.
So there's folks who I think who are like, who might have to like, you know, that's not going to be a problem. Folks who go in deep like that. And I'm very impressed with them. I've been on sessions where I can feel everybody just leaving me in the dust. They'll listen to one of the couple of notes. So I can literally run it down. I'm like, everybody give me just 1 second. I'm just gonna make a couple of notes. Like, I do feel like the sort of player that I am, I want to be full throated. I like to commit completely. And that's how I have fun. Cause like the background I come from is metal and like, that's what you do. Like it's just,
yes.
And that's why I got into it. I love playing it because it just ignites me. And that's the experience I want to have on stage, is to like be in that flow state where it's just coming through you and you're super present there. You're just listening to the drum or the vocal, vibing with some bespectacled fan there in the front row and shocking them with a quick horn throw. I think I'm sure I've centered you out. It was like, someone's looking at me. Like that's pretty rare. I was like,
dude, it was,
I'm gonna give this guy what he paid for.
Dude, it was
someday so we'll great. Be friends.
I loved it. So,
that's it so amazing. Funny.
I mean,
so hey, when you told me that story, I was
too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Okay. Sorry.
There's I walked away going, I was like, do I remember him? I was like, I think I do. My mind is populating it. Like I can make it make sense. I was like, do I remember this? I was like, I think I do. I don't know. I'm just gonna make it up. Yes, I totally remember that.
I love it. Well, I mean, you've probably thrown a lot of rock horns at a lot of people over the years. I mean,
that was the only time I've ever done it. That's the only time I've ever done it.
See, it's just special for me. Yeah. Just for me. All right, I'm gonna seg to metal. Speaking of rock horns, but as I said, we talk a little bit about, I mean, it's so fascinating. Like you're playing for the biggest pop artist in the world, and your background, your passion. I mean, what we were driving around listening to. Like, remember when you played me that tune? Yeah. Tell me the name of that band again that you played me in my Jeep.
Yes, they're called 4 Year Strong, and the song is called "It's Cool," and it's what I was telling you. It's blazing. I just love, it's the first track on their album, Brain Pain. My friend Travis hit me to it. Like you're going to like this. And just 30 seconds in, I'm like, I am in. This is great. This is hitting me it hits me right in the Pantera, and it hits me right in like the early aughts emo. I didn't know those went together so well. I was like, oh man, listen to this.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like my white whale. Like I'm trying to transcribe it, the guitar parts, and like really get them under my fingers. It's so, so fast. But that is like, that it's kind of weird. So I started on classical upright. I went to a middle school and high school with a amazing, well-funded, passionately led classical. And we had a marching band, we had a chorus, a theater program, just a lot of arts funding in the school, the public school that I went to, which is absolutely amazing. So the first thing I fell in love with is just the idea of like playing, you know, these big long notes in classical, and listening to how that supports, listening to what the cellos, the violas, the violins 1 and 2, like what they're doing, how they're making, how I'm informing this chord, listening to how it plays again, you know, as we got to more challenging stuff, it's playing against it, it's creating these suspensions and all this kind of stuff, without knowing the formal language, where I just feel my, I'm looking at my little black dots on the thing, but like there's something else going on around me that as long as I have the tempo from the conductor and my music in front of me, but then it's sort of like pulls you through. Like I'm doing it, but I didn't write this part. This is not me vibing to, you know, a Rachmaninoff symphony or whatever. And then riding to high school in my brother's car, it was And Justice for All and Vulgar Display of Power and all this. Right. And I was like, what's this?
Yes,
what
pumped
is
you up.
This? And it, oh man. And it just hit me just exactly right. And then the first band I was in high school was like a thrash band. And the good news for me is that starting on upright, which is one of the more physically challenging instruments to play, you know, you're worried about your intonation, the strings are thick, the posture is taxing, the bow, the intonation, all that stuff. So like people who go from electric guitar and start playing bass, like the strings are thick and it's difficult. I was like, this is easy. I don't have to worry about it being in tune. I have these strings are tiny compared to me. I had, from playing pits upright, I had a super heavy like attack, and I felt the gears mesh. I was like, this is it. I just love it. I still do. When I have my druthers or I'm working out or want to, you know, I remember like during the pandemic, just, I was like, I haven't done this in a while. Just drove around windows down, blasting metal as loud as I possibly could. It was like comforting for me in that moment, but it's just like, It was the thing I was doing when I first, the seeds of wanting to be a musician were playing in my high school thrash band. I'm like, this is, there's something here. I had gotten to a point where I was playing a lot of different types of music. And I slowly discovered it's like, I like playing, and it can be music that I like, you know, something like metal or funk that is like, that moves me to listen to. Then also I don't have a real strong background in listening to fusion, but I loved playing it. It was so wild and technical and improvisational and, you know, trying to keep time stay while the drummer just goes berserk. And like this song might be 7 minutes, it might be 2 minutes, it might be 10 minutes. Who knows? You're just listening and looking. And I think that was like the point it hit me. It's like, I think I just have fun playing. So if I can have fun playing anything, I'm just going to go to Nashville and see what they want me to play there.
But where
that kind of lit up for me was just like, I don't know. There's just that for me, there's just something about metal and like it was like my sophomore year of high school. So I got into like the dress, the hair, the combat boots, the group of kids that all sat together at once. I was like, God, I just love everything about this. Just feels right to me. So I was telling you too, I remember that like to prep for this tour, because the show is over 3 hours long, that one of the things that I work on actively is not necessarily like technique or soloing or anything like that. I play a lot of metal because it is difficult, because I have to dig in hard and play fast with a lot of intensity, a song that I want to go right because I love it so much. Yes. Because what I'm trying to build like endurance, like literal stamina, like in my hands, so that if I go for a lick towards the end of the night, like I've still got some horsepower. Like I just, my hands are getting tired. I was like, I need to like lift basically with my hands and Pantera and 4 Year Strong and Justice for All are like how I get, that's what I warm up. And then when I've spent time practicing during the day, that's what I'm playing.
Dude, I love that. And I mean, I'm a metalhead as well. So it just warms my heart. I mean, even when I saw you throw me the horns, I was like, oh, this dude, there's a story, you know, like this guy isn't just, he's not, you know, like, oh, just lives and breathes, you know, pop music or country. There's something else going on. And I just, I love that. I love when, side musicians have a point of view, and it's not only the gig they're playing, right? They're versatile, right? You can do a bunch of different things. I got that from you right away. I have to talk to you too before we wrap it up. I have to talk to you about basses, because
let's talk about basses.
There's some basses that you play on the gig that are so cool, and you have all these awesome basses behind you, and I would just love to know too. Like I see that cool Nordstrand bass. I see Spectre back there.
Yes, you do.
I wonder. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So is that a jazz bass? It's cut off in the framing right now, but
this is. I'd be happy to show you soon. This is a Fender Custom Shop. So I'm very, very pleased to own this, a Dennis Galuska master build, which is just a brilliant bass. So it's regular sort of like deluxe jazz guts, and then Seymour Duncan quarter pound PJ.
Amazing.
It's just yeah, thank you. I absolutely love this bass. It plays absolutely beautiful. It does like the modern, sort of like modern country or pop. It does metal really well. I used this when I was out with Florida Georgia Line. This is one of the main basses I use. It's really mid rangey. It pops through really well, just very naturally.
Let's talk about
some basses.
Man, I mean, you know, so I'm seeing you on stage with Taylor. You had a couple of P basses, mm-hmm. rounds and flats, right?
Yes. So I use two different precision basses. I'm going to mess up the names. One is a 62 reissue that I've had for a really long time. And the new one, there's like a Daphne. I did a reel about it. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's a 1960 reissue.
Yeah,
I can't. Their names kind of run together for me. It's like a classic player plus deluxe retro refit Mark II. It's one of those. It's a brilliant bass. It's beautiful. It has like the clay dots. I love the color. They both have flats on them.
That was as a
guy who comes from like Flea and Billy Gould. Flats took me a long time to like get my brain around, and now I'm like, kids, it's the sauce. Learn how to get good tones out of a passive bass with flats on it. It's like it's mixed already. Like the only parts of like the pick attack or the slide that are getting through, that's the only are just the parts you want. And I like bright. That's the other thing. Like where I come from, like I like stringy, bright, spankety sounds. But like that's tough in a mix, my guy.
I know,
like
it is.
And
it
most
really
of the
is.
And then what I like about a flat one bass is you can hit it pretty hard, and the way it reacts is mostly musical, even though because you're not getting a lot of clank and it's not a lot of like high-end stuff. It just goes thud in a really satisfying and musical way.
What flats do you play?
I use D'Addario. I've been with D'Addario for strings for a long time. I use NYXLs for anything. I play with round wounds and chromes for anything that's flat.
Chromes are so awesome.
They're so great. And I've told my tech, Darren Ketty, he's one of the best. He's like, do you want to change these flats? And I was like, the answer to that is no. And it's no forever. Yeah, like
never.
Like if one of them, he's like, I'm cleaning them and stuff. Do you want to change them? I was like, I do not. I have, I'm one of these guys. So I got this is an Orlando. I don't know if I ever showed you this one.
Oh,
it's a,
cool.
it has one of these guys.
Yeah, the scroll headstock. Wow.
It's like it was made in like the Matsumoku Aria factory.
Wow.
Like just like 70 or 71. So this is a 70 or 71. And as far as I can tell, these are the flats that like came on it.
Oh,
like I bought this 12 years ago and I've never changed them.
Wow.
And yeah, I just like that's it's part of the this. It's surprisingly loud. If you saw the Stone Temple Pilots Unplugged, that's what Rob DeLeo is playing.
Really? Of course I've seen that.
There's a couple of them running around. This is the studio's secret weapon for sure. Like it's not like $1 million billion. It's just kind of rare and sort of funky, and just again is like pre-mixed. Also has flats on this guy. And this is one of my favorites for sure.
Killer. And what then, else you got back there that you're excited about?
Let's see. What's with it? Oh man, this guy.
This is just like candy store with.
Amos. Oh yeah, come really on. Fun. This is one of my favorites as well.
Beautiful. Look at that bass.
Yeah. Thank you. This is
to
one of my favorites.
Listening. What do we have in front of us here?
Oh yes,
some
of course.
People that just listen. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So for the audio only crew, the last bass is a Hofner style, very like violin shaped, deep dark brown, and it has an upright bass scrolled headstock, short scale of flats. This guy is this is an Ultra. It's a jazz bass in turquoise, the bound and blocked, and I put a cream pickup colors on it. That is covers that I got from Amazon, and I was so in love with it that Fender made me a neck with a matched headstock.
Oh, killer.
I'm absolutely in love with it. So this is, you know, it's a 2019 or whatever, but it's sort of doing a mid-60s
vibe.
This is one of my favorite. This is the absolute brand new round wounds on this. Very bright, very snappy. I think Blue to Tiger has a bass a lot like this that you often see her with.
Yeah.
So this is in danger of the
similar.
Yeah, becoming the Blue to Tiger signature bass. She is a monster.
She's
oh my gosh! Big shouts out to Blue. If you guys never seen that show,
Blue.
It's so entertaining. She's a demon on the bass. She did something really rude to the Bridge of Cruel Summer recently that I don't appreciate. Did you see that? She put on Cruel Summer by Taylor and just blazed over the bridge like a jerk.
And you're like, hey,
I was like, excuse me. Excuse me.
Feelings.
A little bit. If it hadn't been so absolutely funky and
so
tasteful.
Cool.
And if I wasn't playing keys on that song, so I'm just like,
yeah.
I can't even cover it.
Tell me the Desert Island bass. If you you've got a bunch of bass guitars, because I know you've got a bunch.
Yeah.
Because we talked collections, and I've got a bunch, and you've got a bunch.
Yep.
And
you've got a bunch. I've got a bunch.
If you had to pick one, just the one. Which one would
just
it be?
The one.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with my instincts to change. It changes, like I'm sure everybody does.
Yeah.
This will take me a second, if that's okay. I gotta grab it out of my
case. Take all the seconds you need. What a treat.
This is the room bass for this tour, and it was something I hadn't been reaching for a ton, but that's the bass I've been playing in the room to like practice and warm up, and it is. That's okay. It's a Yamaha BBP34.
Yes.
It's one of these guys.
I wonder if it would be a Yamaha.
Yes, it would. It's either this or I'll go get, if I have enough mic cable, I'll show you that too. I have a BB, a classic sort of BB. These are amazing. So fun. They just, this thing barks like crazy. It has a couple of custom things in it. It has Seymour Duncan quarter pound PJs as well.
Yep.
And Pat from the custom shop put a three-way switch, so it's volume tone three-way switch.
Oh, cool.
Instead of like a volume, I like a three-way switch.
You want to choose it. Folks were
like, oh, I'm neck pickup with like, ooh, a little bit of bridge pickup. I can't hear it. It doesn't really do it for me. So I want like, it's a P bass, it's Jaco, or it's a PJ. That's just sort of my approach.
Yep.
But it's really fun to play. It's really expressive. It has a quarter pounds and round mount, so it's really bright.
Yes.
And I think that I was pretty impressed. I was skeptical about, because this is a big redesign.
Sure.
Oh, here it is. Yeah. Also, I'm sure folks have seen the more classic BB shape.
Oh, they're so cool though.
But if you don't know what we're talking about,
you love a BB.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is the classic thing. Tony Canal for a lot of people, Michael Anthony, like,
yes.
This was another one that absolutely shocked me. I got my hands on one and I was just like, holy shit, this is so fun. It just jumps.
So cool.
They really respond to like a heavy hand really well. Yes. And that's kind of important to me because I like, but also it can be really subtle. It can be really fun. And it's just so mid-rangey. It just cuts without having to be loud. And it's just like, and it just listen to like Tragic Kingdom. Like Tony's playing on that. It's like,
it's incredible.
Dude.
He's such a beast.
He really is. I'm Fender till I die. I love them so much. And they're just, it's the sound of modern bass. But for some reason, right in this moment, I'm like, it's a BB.
Except the Yamahas.
They're so damn fun.
I feel like
just one second. Okay, I'm good.
Oh, yes. I feel like maybe I asked you the Desert Island question, and maybe that should have been a dart into the neck. That should have been my third. Because you gave up Fender for Yamaha.
Yeah. Okay, no, that's not what I did.
Yeah. No. Oh,
wow.
Man.
This is going to be the podcast that gets us both fired. This is going to be great.
Yes, exactly. Dude, hey, listen, you've been so gracious. Thank you very much.
Oh, dude, thank you. This is awesome. You guys are doing the work, and like, I'm just so glad. Like, I love SBL. I think it's awesome. The Groove Trainer is epic. I love it.
Do you use the Groove Trainer all the time?
Yes. Ah. Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh man, that makes me so happy.
It's so well designed. Big up. This is called Vertical Synergy. It's so well designed, and it is such a useful way to go. Like, you just want to like run etudes to a click, great, you can do that. But like much more, and this is a big practice thing for me, and I think you'll dig with this, is like one thing I wanted to get good at is just playing. playing something. Like, here's, yeah, here's a groove, something. Pick it up and play something interesting. Not
yes,
wow, that was incredible. Like, can you pick it up, think of something, and just make a statement right away? And like,
yep,
all the different drum grooves that are on there, they're really musical, yes, they're really good sounding. Yep. Like, I don't have to like set up my Apollo, turn on a DAW, like load in a drum loop, get it for, you know, it's just such a brilliant shortcut to that. And man, oh man, that is an endless vein that you can mine as a bass player, and you can never run out of creativity in time. Improv. I just sometimes sit there and play like one note, and it's just like, I'm, yeah, just going to play a C. How interesting can I make this C against this groove?
It's so,
but cool. Yeah, I love it, man. It's
I'm so glad, man. I use it all the time too. I use it all the time too. Let me. I like to ask this of everybody that we have doing interviews, podcasts, and I want to ask this to you, which is, what would you tell a young Amos Heller, like, it, from your position now, what would you go back if you had a time machine and you had to? What would you say? and it was a save the world. It was a Terminator situation. What would you go back and tell yourself?
Man, that is a really, really good question. My instinct is to say what I would hand myself is a mixed CD. And I would put like Shit Damn Motherfucker by D'Angelo on it. And I would put My Girl. And I would like, I was just so into chicka chicka chicka. And like, I'm never going to be able to place the moment that I was standing in a CD store and I put on Victor Wooten's Show of Hands and headphones and was laughing out loud. I've never heard such a thing.
Yes,
it just drew me on. And then like, we were sort of joking, like, almost everybody I know goes into Stratosphere with all this crazy, wow, what can I do? Can I Steve Vai? Can I Steve Gadd? Can I Steve Bailey? Whatever. And then you just like come back down to earth. Like, nope, it's Cliff Williams. Like that's the gospel. That's the sauce. It's thumping eighth notes. I just think I would try to turn my head just a little bit.
Yeah.
To things that are still, the bass is still doing stuff. It's still out. It's still interesting.
Yes.
But I was like, I just want to go like, kids, sit down and learn the White Album. Like, learn it. Like, stir this subtlety, this musicality into your playing a little bit. So that's, and I find myself saying, I have a nephew who fell in love with Cliff Burton the same way I did. And it's just but if this gets you to sit down and play, then do that. Do the stuff you love. Awesome. You're going to be best at that anyway.
Right.
But like, all of my advances as a player, and I'd say the last 5 years are all listening, all subtlety, all learning the differences in controls between palm muting here, 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 and here, or here, or playing here at this angle, or here at this angle, or back here at this angle. It's all that, subtle. Or the difference between, you know, a C here and a C here. It's that, and commanding those things and knowing where and when they go.
Paying attention.
So I think I would, with intention.
Yeah.
And I would be trying to draw my younger self to the glory of disappearing into the track a little bit,
and really how
good that really does feel, and like when you realize that your drummer is playing a little more aggressively because you've stepped back a little bit, and everything feels because what you're doing is everything feels so solid. Now he feels like he can take a stroll because he's not worried about times. He's got an ally back there making sure the time sits. Like that is like that, that's the sauce. That's it. That like, that's exciting. But you know, I think at the time I would have gone, that's great. Meanwhile, I'm really going to learn how to play More Love by Victor Wooten. And if it takes me 2 months, it takes me 2 months.
Yeah. But I know that feeling of like wanting to say to yourself, hey, there's more than just the niche things that you're into, or there's more than just chops.
Yeah.
But sometimes it has to happen. You have to get sort of punched by it, or like it has to happen as a result of you going through the chops phase. But I love that. I love that you would play yourself music. I think that's so cool.
I think that's what I do. I think it's like, oh yeah,
it is.
Thanks, man. I would also hand myself a precision bass with flats on it. Like, learn to play that. We talked about this a little bit at Sushi that like I had.
We did.
I played like an Ibanez, and I had a PV Foundation. And the second I had some money, I bought a Ken Smith. And then I had a Warwick. Then I had a Carvin. It was the 90s. But like these, you breathe on the string. It just explodes. And then I got my first jazz bass. I was like, I don't know how to play this. Like getting a good sound out of this. And I was like, I know these sound good because everyone and their mom plays them. But I was so used to playing active basses. Like, I must need to turn my preamp up. I must need to cook this on the at the amp or on the floor somewhere. It's like, no, dog. Yes. It is in the hands. And I know how tiresome that sounds, but it is. It starts in the hands.
But so like, true.
That like that's – there's such a lesson in a precision bass, a jazz bass, a BB, something like this. Like there's lessons – it's full of lessons if you have the ears to hear them.
Oh, man. Ooh.
Ooh, that felt good coming out.
Sounded good, too. Dang. Ladies and gentlemen.
That's me. That's me at 19. I'm thinking, that's great, right?
I love that. I love that you have all that horsepower. I think, wasn't it Pat Metheny? I think maybe it was Pat Metheny who said, you know, someone said, like, what's your ideal bass player? And he said, someone that has all... like that knows bebop language in and out, but never shows it.
Yeah.
And that's that thing of like, the metal, you know, the stuff for you, the technique, the slapping, the, all that time you spent on that, but you're not doing that on your gigs all the time, but it's under the hood so that when there's a moment that comes up, you can execute because you're a freaking race car, baby. You're a race car.
Ooh, I like that. Mm. Yeah, this is setting me up for the rest of the day, man. I'm like, look out, everybody. I'm a time traveling race car. Ian said I could travel through time and be a race car.
Damn right, it's true. and I just I cannot tell you how much I admire you, man. I mean, I just want to say,
oh, thanks, dude.
I admire your playing. I admire your work ethic. We even talked when we were hanging out. We talked about physicality and what you do. I mean, you have this regimen of stuff you do for your body and your mind that, you know, helps you on the road. And I just, you just will never know how much I took away from that time. And I really appreciated spending it with you. And I appreciate it today too. And this audience that checks this out is really going to benefit from this. So man, dude, from the bottom of my heart, man, thank you very much for all that you share. So awesome.
I'm beyond honored to be here. It was just for me too, dude. It was just beyond good. Like it was really thinking, like I looked at my watch, it was like 3:15. I was like, dude, I have to go. Like I could have sat there with you absolutely all day. I've never been left. I kept wanting to say this when you talk about like bringing the basses to the restaurant. I was like, if we were in Nashville, they would nuke this restaurant from orbit for doing this. Like I was just trying to imagine sitting down at like Bongo Job, a couple of dudes with like basses out. Everybody like, oh my god, seriously.
Okay,
but it's like, who cares? It's all joy. It's all excitement.
Yeah, I don't care.
And the whole point of this whole thing. So I love SBL. I love you. I love all the stuff you guys are doing. It's like, because it's hard to know how to get better. Let's help you get better, because being better is fun. Being good at bass is fun as hell,
dude.
And like, I highly recommend
the joy. Yeah, that's what makes it fun, is getting better at it.
It is really fun. Yeah, yeah.
Dude, that's amazing. That's an incredible bit of wisdom, actually, that like you can't access the fun unless you're good at it.
You just, right? it's like the gig. I can't have fun at the gig unless I know it. And that just takes time. And when like, there's just something about bass. And I think it was like, you know, I was a finger style player. Like you have your hands on it, just feel really connected to it. I just love playing bass. And that was like, when I knew I wanted to do it, it was like, the more time I spend on this, the better I get at this, the more I fall in love with it, the better I want to get.
Yeah.
And it's great. And like for you guys to put your blood, sweat and tears into an education platform that's just about one thing, is helping people get better at bass. It's awesome. You get up every day and make the world a better place for bass players.
Ah, man. Well, I'll take it. It's hard to, I'll take it. It's hard for me to take it, but I appreciate it.
And yeah, dude, it's great.
Man, thanks for today. This was so fun.
This is fun, dude. Yeah. Once again, I got to go pick up my kids from camp. I could do this for another 2 hours.
Awesome. Well, we will. Let's do it again sometime. Let's do it again sometime with Scott. He would love to do it too.
Once the darts wear off, we'll get back in there.
Yeah. It's like, get up, regain consciousness. Amos Heller, you're the best. You're the best. I'll speak to you soon.
You're great, Ian.
All right.
Thanks, bud. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Bye.